Lecture 2 of Pastoral Medicine. Dear friends, if we are going to consider the mutual concerns of priest and physician, we should look first at certain phenomena in human life that slide over easily into the pathological field, phenomena that need a physician's understanding, and that also reach in an extraordinary way into profound depths, even, may I say, into the esoteric realm of religious life. We have to realize that all branches of human knowledge must be liberated from a certain coarse attitude that has come into them in this materialistic epoch. We need only recall how certain phenomena, which had been grouped together for some time under the heading genius and insanity, have recently been given a crass interpretation by Lombroso and his school, and also by others. Footnote: César Lombroso, Lombroso, 1836-1909, Italian anthropologist, wrote Genius and Insanity, 1864, and titled The Criminal, Anthropological, Medical, and Legal Aspects, 1876. End of footnote. I am not pointing to the research itself, that has its uses, but rather to their way of looking at things, to what they brought out as, quote, criminal anthropology, close quote, from studying the skulls of criminals. The opinions they voiced were not only coarse, they were extraordinarily commonplace. Indeed, one can say, and here we may make use of certain categories, for we are dealing here with a border realm of pastoral medicine. One can say, obviously the Philistines all got together and established among themselves what the normal type of human being is, and it was as near as could possibly be to a Philistine. And whatever deviated from this type was pathological. Genius on one side, insanity on the other. Each in its own way was pathological. Since it is quite obvious to anyone with insight that every pathological characteristic also expresses itself bodily, it is also obvious that symptoms can be found in bodily characteristics, pointing in one or the other direction. It is a matter of regarding the symptoms in the proper way. Even the lobe of an ear can, under certain conditions, be clearly revealing of some psychological peculiarity, because such psychological peculiarities are connected with the karma that works over from earlier incarnations. The forces that build the physical organism in the first 7 years of human life are the same forces by which later we think. So it is important to consider certain phenomena, not in the customary manner, but in a really appropriate way. And not so much regarding them as pathological, although we will be led into aspects of pathology through these very phenomena, but more to obtain through them a view of human life itself. Let us for a moment review the picture of man that anthroposophy gives us. The human being stands before us in his physical body, which has a long evolution behind it, three preparatory stages before it became his earthly body, as is described in my book titled Occult Science and Outline. This earthly body needs much more for it to be understood than what is brought to it by today's anatomy and physiology. For I would point out that the human physical body, as it is today, is a true image of the etheric body, which is in its third stage of development, of the astral body, which is in its second stage, and even to a certain degree, of the ego organization which man first received on earth, which therefore is in its first stage of development. All of this is stamped like the stamp of a seal upon the human physical body, which makes the physical body, as it confronts us today, extraordinarily complicated. Only its purely mineral physical nature can be understood with the methods of knowledge that are brought to it today. What the etheric body impresses upon it is not to be reached at all by those methods. That has to be observed with the eye of a sculptor, in such a way that one obtains pictorial images of cosmic forces, images that can then be recognized again in the form of the entire man and in the forms of the single organs. The physical human being is also an image of the breathing and blood circulation. But the entire dynamic activity that works and weaves through the blood circulation and breathing system can only be understood if one thinks of it in musical forms. If, for instance, one recognizes the formative forces which are poured into the skeletal system and then became active in a finer capacity in the breathing and circulation. If one recognizes these forces as possessing a musical character. We can perceive in eurythmy how the octave goes out from the shoulder blade and proceeds along the bones of the arm. This bone formation of the arm cannot be understood from a mechanical view of dynamics, but only from musical insight. We found the interval of the prime extending from the shoulder blade to the bone of the upper arm, the humerus. The interval of the second in the humerus. The third from the elbow to the wrist. We find two bones there because there are two thirds in music, a larger and a smaller, and so on. In short, if we want to find the impression of the astral body upon the physical body, upon the breathing and blood circulation, we are obliged to bring a musical understanding to it. Still more difficult to understand is the ego organization. For this, one needs to grasp the meaning of the first verse of the Gospel of St. John, quote, "In the beginning was the Word," close quote. The Word is meant there to be understood in a concrete sense, not abstractly as commentators of the Gospels usually present it. If this is applied concretely to the real human being, it provides an explanation of how the ego organization penetrates the human physical body. You can see that we ought to add much more to our studies if they are to lead to a true understanding of the human being. However, I am convinced that a tremendous amount of material could be eliminated not only from medical courses, but from theological courses too. If one would only assemble the really essential material, the number of years a medical student, for instance, must spend today in his course would not be lengthened but shortened. Naturally, it is thought in materialistic fashion today that if there's something new to be included, you must tack another half year onto the course. Out of the knowledge that anthroposophy gives us, we can say that the human being stands before us in his physical, etheric, and astral bodies and his ego organization. During waking life, these four members of the human organization are in close connection. During sleep, the physical body and etheric body are together on one side, and the ego organization and astral body on the other side. With knowledge of this fact, we are then able to say that the greatest variety of irregularities can appear in the connection of ego organization and astral body with etheric body and physical body. It can happen, for instance, like this. Let me make a diagram. Physical body, etheric body, astral body, ego organization, and there's a color plate at the end of this book, plate 1, number 1. So, in waking condition, the so-called normal relation prevails among these four members of the human organization. But it can also happen that the physical body and etheric body are in some kind of normal connection, also that the astral body sits within them comparatively normally, but that the ego organization is somehow not sitting within the astral body properly, plate 1, number 2. Then we have an irregularity that in the first place confronts us in the waking condition. The person is unable to come with his ego organization properly into his astral body. Therefore, his life of feeling is very much disturbed. He can even form quite lively thoughts, for thoughts depend, in the main, upon a normal connection of the astral body with the other bodies. But that the sense impressions will be grasped appropriately by the thoughts depends upon the ego organization being normally united with the other members of the human being. If this is not the case, if the ego organization is not properly connected with the other members, then the sense impressions become dim. And in the same measure that the sense impressions fade, the thoughts become livelier. The sense impressions can appear almost ghostly, not clear as we normally have them. The soul life of such a person is flowing away. His sense impressions have something misty about them. They seem to be continually vanishing. At the same time, his thoughts have a lively quality and tend to become more intense, more colored, almost as if they were sense impressions themselves. When such a person sleeps, his ego organization is not properly within the astral body, and the consequence is that now he has extraordinarily strong experiences in fine detail of the external world around him. He has experiences with his ego and astral body both outside his physical and etheric bodies, of that part of the world in which he lives, for instance, the finer details of the plants or orchard around his house. Not what he sees during the day, but the delicate flavor of the apples and so forth. That is really what he experiences. And in addition, pale thoughts that are after effects in the astral body from his waking life. You see, it is difficult if you have such a person before you, and you may encounter him in all variations in the most manifold circumstances of life. You may meet him in your vocation as physician or as priest, or the whole congregation may encounter him. You can find him in endless variety, for instance, in a village. Today, if the physician finds him in an early stage of life, he makes the diagnosis psychopathological impairment. To the modern physician, he is a psychopathological impairment case. He is at the borderline between health and illness. His nervous system, for instance, can be considered to be on a pathological level. The priest, if he is well-schooled, let us say a Benedictine, the ordinary parish priests in the Catholic Church are sometimes not so well-schooled. If he is a well-schooled Benedictine or Jesuit or Barnabite, or the like, and has such a person before him with soul forces thoroughly unstable, for they are working quite differently from the way they would work in a so-called normal person, then he knows from his esoteric background that the things such a person tells him, even though this person is at the very border between health and illness, even though his nervous system can be diagnosed as thoroughly pathological, the priest knows that if he interprets them properly, they can give him genuine revelations from the spiritual world, just as one can have them from a really insane person. But the insane person is not able to interpret them, only someone who comprehends the whole situation. Thus you can encounter such a person if you are a physician, and we will see how he should be regarded medically from an anthroposophical point of view. Thus you can also encounter him if you are a priest, and even the entire congregation can encounter him. But now perhaps the person develops further. Then something quite special appears. His physical and etheric bodies are still in, so to say, normal connection. But now there begins to be a stronger pull of the ego organization. It was already in an irregular relation to the other members, a stronger pull, drawing the astral body to itself, so that the ego organization and astral body are now more closely bound together, and they do not enter properly, either of them, into the physical and etheric bodies, plate 1, number 3. Then the following can take place. The person becomes unable to control his physical and etheric bodies properly from out of his astral body and ego. He is unable to push his astral body and ego organization properly into his external senses. Therefore, every now and then his senses leave him. His sense impressions in general fade away, and he falls into a kind of dizzy dream state. But then, in the most varied way, his moral impulses can appear with special strength. They can be confused, but also, if the rest of the organism is as just described, they can be extremely casuistic and exaggeratedly so. Now, the physician finds in such a case that physical and biochemical changes have taken place in the sense organs and the nerve substance. He will find, although he may take slight notice of them, great abnormalities in the ductless glands and their hormone secretion, in the glands we call adrenal glands, and the glands that are hidden in the neck as small glands within the thyroid gland. In such a case, there are changes, particularly in the pituitary gland and in the pineal gland. These are more generally recognized than are the changes in the nervous system and in the general area of the senses. Another priest comes in contact with such a person. The person tells him what he is experiencing in this condition, a specially strong feeling of sin, stronger than people normally have. The priest can learn very much, and Catholic priests do. Precisely from such individuals, they learn what an extreme consciousness of sin can be like, something developed so weakly in most human beings. Also in such a person, the love of one's neighbor can become tremendously intense, so much so that the person can get himself into great trouble because of it, which he will then confess to the priest. But the situation can develop still further. It can now come about that the physical body remains comparatively isolated, because the etheric body, from time to time or even permanently, does not entirely penetrate it, so that now the astral and etheric bodies and ego organization are closely united with one another, and the physical organism is separate from them. Plate 2. Such a person, if we use the current materialistic terms, but we are going to outgrow them in the course of our present study, such a person is called, in most cases, a severely mentally retarded individual. He is unable from his soul spiritual individuality to control his physical limbs in any direction, not even in the direction of his own will. Such a person pulls his physical organism along, as it were, after him. If a human being is in this condition in early childhood, from birth, he is also diagnosed as mentally retarded, because in the present stage of Earth evolution, when all three members, ego organization, astral organization, and etheric body, are separated from the physical, and the lone physical body is dragged along after them, the child cannot perceive, cannot be active, cannot be illumined by his ego organization, astral body, and etheric body, so his experiences are dim, and he goes about in his physical body as if he were anesthetized. This is extreme mental retardation, and one has to think how, at this stage, one can bring the other bodies down into the physical organism. Here it can be a matter of pedagogical measures, but also to a great extent of external therapeutic measures. But now the priest can be quite amazed at what such a person will confess to him. The priest may consider himself very clever, but even thoroughly educated priests, there really are such men in Catholicism, one must not underestimate it, they pay attention if a so-called sick man comes to them and says, "The things you pronounce from the pulpit aren't worth much. They don't add up to anything. They don't reach up to the dwelling place of God. They don't have any worth except external worth." One must really rest in God with one's whole being. That's the kind of thing such people say. In every other area of life, they behave in such a way that one must rate them externally mentally retarded. But in a conversation with their priest, they come out with such speeches. They claim to know inner religious life more intimately than someone who speaks of it professionally. They feel contempt for the professional. They call what they experience, quote, rest in God, close quote. And you can see that the priest must find ways and means to relate himself to what such a person, one can say patient, or one can use other terms, to what such a human being is experiencing within himself. One has to have a sensitive understanding for the fact that pathological conditions can be found in all spheres of life, for the fact that some human being may be quite unable at the present time to find his way in the physical sense world, quite unable to be the sort of human that external life now requires all of us to be. We are all necessarily, to a certain degree, Philistines, as regards external life. But such persons, as I am describing, are not in condition to travel along our Philistine paths. They have to travel other ways. A priest must be able to feel what he can give such a person, how to connect what he can give out of himself with what that other human being is experiencing. Very often, such a person is simply called, quote, one of the queer ones, close quote. This demands an understanding of the subtle transition from illness to spirituality. But our study can go much further. Let us think what happens when a human being goes through his entire sequence of development in the course of his life. At some life period, he is in this condition, plate 1, number 2, where only the ego organization has loosened itself from the other members of the organism. In a later life period, he advances to this condition, plate 1, number 3. In a still later period, to this, plate 2. He only goes through this sequence if the first condition, perhaps in childhood, which is still normal, shows a tendency in him already to lose the balance of the four members of his organism. If the physician comes upon such a person destined to go through all these four stages, the first very slightly abnormal, the others as I have pictured them, he will find there is tremendous instability, and he must do something about it. Usually nothing can be done. Sometimes he prescribes intensive treatment. It accomplishes nothing. Perhaps later he is again in contact with this person and finds that the first unstable condition has advanced to the next, as I described it, with the sense impressions becoming vague and the thoughts highly colored. Eventually, he finds the excessively strong consciousness of sin. Naturally, a physician does not want to take any notice of that, for now the symptoms are beginning to play over into the soul realm. Usually it is at this time that the person finally gets in touch with a priest, particularly when he comes to the fourth stage. Now the individuals who go through these stages, it is connected with their karma, their repeated earth lives, have purely, out of their deep intuition, developed a wonderful terminology for all this, especially if they have gone through the stages in sequence. With the first stage almost normal, they are able to speak in a wonderful way about what they experience. They say, for instance, when they are still quite young people, if the labile condition starts between 17 and 19 years, man must know himself, and they demand complete knowledge of themselves. Now, with their ego organization separated, they come of their own initiative to an active meditative life. Very often they call this, quote, active prayer, close quote, active meditation. And they are grateful when some well-schooled priest gives them instruction about prayer. Then they are entirely absorbed in prayer, and they are experiencing in it what they now begin to describe by a wonderful terminology. They look back at their first stage and call what they perceive, quote, the first dwelling place of God, close quote, because their ego has not entirely penetrated the other members of their organism. And so, to a certain extent, they are seeing themselves from within, not merely from without. This, their perception from within, increases. It becomes, as it were, a larger space, quote, the first dwelling place of God, close quote. What next appears, what I have described from another point of view, is richer. It is more inwardly detailed. they see much more from within, quote, the second dwelling place of God, close quote. When the third stage is reached, the inner vision is extraordinarily beautiful, and such persons say, quote, I see the third dwelling place of God. It is tremendously magnificent, with spiritual beings moving within it. Close quote. This is inner vision, a powerful, glorious vision of a world woven by spirit. Quote, the third dwelling place of God, close quote, or the house of God. There are variations in the words the persons use. When they reach the fourth stage, they no longer want advice about active meditation, for usually they have reached the view that everything will be given them through grace, and they must wait. They talk about passive prayer, passive meditation, that they must not pray out of their own initiative, for it will come to them if God wants to give it to them. Here, the priest must have a fine instinct for recognizing when this stage passes over into the next. For now the persons speak of rest prayer, during which they do nothing at all. They let God hold sway in them. That is how they experience the fourth dwelling place of God. Sometimes from the descriptions they give at this stage, from what, if we speak medically, such a quote-unquote patient says, a priest can really learn a tremendous amount of esoteric theology. If he is a good interpreter, the theological detail becomes clear to him. If he listens very carefully to what such, I say it with quotation marks, such patients tell him, to what they know. Much of what is taught in theology, particularly Catholic theology, Catholic pastoral theology, is founded on what various enlightened, trained father confessors have heard from certain penitents who have undergone this sequence of development. Ordinary conceptions of health and illness cease at this point to have any meaning. If such a man is hidden away in an office, or if such a woman becomes an ordinary housewife who must spend her days in the kitchen or something similar in bourgeois everyday life, these persons become really insane and behave outwardly in such a way that they can only be regarded as insane. If a priest notices at the right moment how things are developing, he gets the woman into a cloister and arranges for her to live in appropriate surroundings to develop the four stages in proper order. Through such a patient, the enlightened father confessor is able to look into the spiritual world in a modern way, but similarly to the Greek priests who learned about the spiritual world from the Pythians. Footnote, Pythians, priestesses of Apollo, who delivered the oracles at Delphi. End of footnote. The Pythians, who imparted all kinds of revelations concerning the spiritual world through earthly smoke and vapor. What sense would there be today in writing a thesis on, quote, the pathological aspect of the Greek Pythians, close quote? It could certainly be done, and it would be correct, even absolutely true, but it would have no meaning in a higher sense. For as a matter of fact, very much of what flowed in a magnificent way from Greek theology into the entire cultural life of Greece originated in the revelations of the Pythians. As a rule, the Pythians were individuals who had come either to this third stage or even to the fourth stage. But we can think of a personality in a later epoch who went through these stages under the wise direction of her father confessors, so that she could devote herself undisturbed to her inner visions. Something very wonderful developed for her, which indeed also remained to a certain degree pathological. Her life was not just a concern of the physician or of the priest, but a concern of the entire church. The church pronounced her a saint after her death. This was St. Teresa. This was approximately her path. Footnote, Theresia von Jesu or von Avila, 1515-1582, Carmelite nun, reformed the order in association with John of the Cross, canonized by the Church. End of footnote. You see, dear friends, one must examine such things as this if one wants to discover what will give medicine and theology a real insight into the nature of the human being. One must be prepared to go far beyond the usual category of ideas, for they lose their value. Otherwise, one can no longer differentiate between a saint and a fool, between a madman and a genius, and can no longer distinguish any of the others except a normal dyed-in-the-wool average citizen. This is a view of the human being that must first be met with understanding. Then it can really lead to fundamental esoteric knowledge. But it can also be tremendously enlightening in regard to psychological abnormalities, as well as physical abnormalities and physical illnesses. For the stages which we have been discussing to appear, certain conditions are necessary. There has to be a certain consistency of the person's ego, so that it is not completely penetrating his organism. Also, there must be a certain consistency of the astral body. If it is not fine, as it was in St. Teresa, if it is coarse, then the result will be different. With St. Teresa, due to the delicacy of her ego organization and astral body, certain physical organs in the lower body had been formed with the same fragile quality. But it can happen that the ego organization and astral body are quite coarse, and yet they have the same characteristic as above. Such an individual can be comparatively normal and show only the physical correlate. Then it is only a physical illness. One could say, on the one hand, there can be a St. Teresa constitution, with its visions and poetic beauty, and on the other hand, its physical counter-image in diseased abdominal organs, which in the course of this second person's life is not reflected in his ego and astral organization. All these things must be spoken about and examined, for they confront whoever holds responsibility as physician or priest, and he must be equal to their challenge. A theological, religious activity only begins to be effective if the theologian is prepared to cope with such phenomena, and the physician only begins to be a healer of his fellow men if he also is prepared to deal with such symptoms. The end of Lecture 2.